there, boils and ghouls. This is Stuart Wellington of the Flophouse Podcast. We're doing one of those Flophouse minis this week. That's where we, on our off weeks, instead of doing our normal show where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it, we're going to be doing something a little bit different tonight. We're going to do whatever the fuck I want to do. Once again, I'm Stuart Wellington, and joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, who will introduce themselves now.
Dan McCoy.
And Elliot Kalin. And I want to warn everybody, this is going to be an extra fun episode because I have a lingering cough.
Oh, that usually equals fun. It's
so
either that
I make
or
cough sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes when Stuart is very drunk, those are good episodes. And sometimes when Dan is getting over being sick.
Yeah.
Just bring some kind of strange energy out. If for some reason we can do all three of those at one time, oh, doggy.
Oh, wow.
So if this is your first time listening to the show,
What's my equivalent to you being drunk and Dan being sick? Just my.
I think you're just kind of normally a ball of energy.
Okay, ball of energy. I was worried where that sentence was going, but what I'm normally.
You're normally a great dude. You have full blown ability to make people laugh.
Great dude-itis.
Okay. So, if this is the first time you're tuning in,
it's a malignant case of good stuff.
Yeah. If this is the first time you're tuning into the podcast, I would highly recommend turning this shit off and listening to a different episode.
We have more normal episodes. Yeah.
Yes. This is for the real ones, the true fans. Uh-oh. Now I'm digging myself in deeper. Okay, so today's episode is something...
part of a series we call Stuart Wellington for Completists Only.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So this is a little Flophouse Manny brought to you by Minnie's Bar and Maniac of New York. And this Manny has a subtitle, and that is we are titling it Stew's Podcast Adventure. That's right. I'm going to be talking about I think everybody knows, if you know me, you know that I'm a man of many passions, and that's an appropriate reference to what I'm talking about today. I'm a man of many passions.
The soap opera passions.
He loves
the
passions.
Soap opera passions.
Many seasons many of passions. Mm-hmm. So what are some of your passions, dude? Name some of your other passions.
Yeah. Before we get into this specific passion, tell us in general what your passions are.
Let's see. Yeah. Creating PowerPoints for live podcasts with my two friends.
Okay. Yeah.
Who are they?
Warhammer. Oh, who are they? Okay. When I mentioned you should ask me questions, I didn't realize. Yeah.
So Warhammer, I would say what? George R. R. Martin, the books, not the shows?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Passion. Wow, you're pretty good.
Is passion fruit one of your passions? Because I know that you're passionate about fruit, but is passion fruit specifically?
Yeah, that's a good question, Dan. That's a good question.
I would like to direct your attention to the episode titled The Fruit House, where I address my top five favorite fruits.
Yeah.
And an episode that seemed to drive you both super mad.
Yeah. And you said that The Passion of the Christ was a life-changing movie for you?
It was. It was life-changing in that my life was different because it was slightly older.
Yep. Yeah. Afterwards, you were somewhat around 2 hours older. Yeah.
Slightly older.
And as soon as the movie was over, you looked in a mirror and you said, "But there was time then. Where did the years go?
Where did it go?" I looked in a mirror. I had a special mirror made just to show. I don't know.
You have a special mirror made that has a mustache painted on it and a beard, so that you look like an old man when you look at it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I had to get a special mirror artist to do that for me. Which I was about to start talking about the rehearsal on HBO Max, which I'm not going to talk about. That's going to be for a later thing because, oh boy, that show, woo doggy. Instead, I'm talking about a different show, or in fact, in this case, I'm going to be talking about a show and a comic book. That's right. Yeah. I'm talking about a long-running...
Right, Three's Company and Mouse.
Weird pairing, but I'm sure it'll all...
I've been reading the book Fun City Cinema recently, which Dan got me for my birthday last year. And at one point they mentioned that there was a double feature that was released where it was Rosemary's Baby and The Odd Couple, and it was called The Greatest Double Feature Ever when it was released.
And it was actually
two classic New York stories on one bill.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't not live up to its name. Okay, so what I'm talking about today is not that. I'm talking about something completely different. I'm talking about a long-running Japanese intellectual property called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. The reason I use the term intellectual property is because it began as a serialized manga and has since been
Can you define manga for any of our listeners who are in 1987?
Sure. So manga means Japanese comic book.
Oh.
And in fact, that's one of the things I wanted to, and it's in addition to be, it's been adapted into live action films, into original animated films, and what is currently going on is an ongoing animated series. Now, I have mentioned JoJo's Bizarre Adventure before, and I've made reference to it on previous episodes of the podcast, often to crickets and no response.
Yeah,
I mean, the problem is that we did a number of episodes that were co-hosted with several crickets.
That's true.
It was hard for them to take part in the conversation because they have to talk by rubbing their wings together, I think.
Uh-huh.
And crickets, write in if I'm wrong. And so it was hard to understand what they were saying a lot of the time.
And I'm glad that you mentioned several, because normally when you go to buy crickets from like a pet store or something, and you're like, yeah, can I get, I don't know, like one or two crickets? They're like, sorry, dog.
Nope.
It only comes in a giant ass box full.
I remember when I was a kid and I had pet lizards, having to go once a week to buy a bag of crickets, and I would feed the lizards one cricket each a day. But it meant that I had a bag of crickets just in my room all the time.
You know what I remember? My brother had also had lizards, and we would walk along the side of the driveway. Like, we would walk along the grass on the side of the driveway, because if you stepped, like, sometimes crickets would jump out onto the driveway where they were easy to pick up and catch. And in retrospect, this memory feels like a memory of a time when there were still bugs in the world, like when climate change hadn't, like, so scorched the earth that, like, I just don't think that if I like went home right now and I walked along a driveway, there'd be enough crickets to feed
I think you need to move to California, Dan, because I'm constantly finding bugs and spiders in my house.
Yeah.
Listeners, write in and tell Dan if you have seen a bug recently.
I mean, I'm not saying they're not
write in,
bugs
tell
around.
Dan, tell Dan where the good cricket hunting is.
I'm aware.
Oh,
trouble.
Weird. We got a bunch of letters from Michael Shannon's character from the movie Bug. He says he's seen a million of them.
He says they're under his skin right now.
So he hasn't seen them then, but he feels them. Dan, I have this image now of you and your brothers wearing orange hunting vests and hunting caps, creeping along a driveway.
Yeah, saying be very, very quiet.
Well, hunting crickets.
Pith helmets, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so from the sounds of it, you guys, do you have any understanding of what JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is about, what it is?
I have to admit, based a lot on your recommendation, I started reading the manga, and I quickly found it was not quite for me.
Okay. Well, we're gonna find out more about that. We'll dig into that.
Audrey has watched it. I didn't watch it with her. I assume it is about a man named JoJo and the bizarre adventure or adventures that he has.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the thing is, JoJo was a man who thought he was a something, but he let it all something something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what he says in the song after that. But I know he's left his home in Tucson, Arizona for something.
For some California grass.
Uh-huh. Yeah, which is, at this point, the California grass is all dying. There's a big drought. So, JoJo, don't come here for grass. Go to the East Coast where there's plenty of water.
Now,
not lately, but anyway.
Do you guys have much experience with manga or watching long-running animated series?
No.
Anime series.
I will say
no. Yeah, sure. I'll say yes. There you got two sides of the coin.
Examples.
We can have a debate.
Give me some examples.
Because I said no.
Dan doesn't have to.
Elliot.
I guess I haven't watched do they have to be long-running Japanese animated shows?
Yes.
Then I guess, you know what? I haven't watched too many of them. Because, like, Cowboy Bebop's not that long a series.
But that's, Footy that, Cody I mean, only that's has a good example.
Okay.
Sure,
but that was, you know, when I was in college, my roommate and I used to watch a lot of Cowboy Bebop. I've read plenty of manga in my time, you know? look, if Katsuhiro Otomo's doing it, I'll read it. That's just, yeah, that just mean, goes without saying. You know?
Yeah, he's the master. He's the best.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to jump right in, and we're going to talk about... Now, the thing about my experience with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is in no way am I an expert, so I'm not going to get everything right. I describe myself as an enthusiastic amateur, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. And my first exposure was to the OVA, which is another term for like a animated movie, basically, that's broken up into parts that came out in the 90s. That's
no, based an OVA, an OVA involves the production of eggs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, mm-hmm. Interesting. So I yeah. got that totally wrong. I biffed it. Add that one yeah. to my biff column.
Put it in the goofs page for Stuart Wellington on IMDb.
Put that in my biffs. Yeah. And I watched the original animation from the 90s that's based on the third part, AKA Stardust Crusaders. And I loved it. I thought it was great. I watched it a bunch of times. I think I recommended it on the show years ago. It's awesome. And then years later, I was looking for some comics to read. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Why don't I go back? I like this. Let me go back and start from the beginning. So I read the first three series in as a manga. And then after that, they didn't have all the mangas translated or put out in these fancy hardbacks. So I started watching the animation. So for series 4 and 5, I only watched the show. So it's going to be my experience might be a little different. I might know things as one way or another way, just to give people a little background.
Sure, you definitely know things. I'm not, don't be so hard on
thank
yourself.
You.
Yeah, and he's seen things. He's seen things mm-hmm. he can never forget.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a surprise that I haven't torn my eyeballs out.
Yeah, it's amazing that Sam Neill got so much acting work after he tore his own eyeballs out, because he's a method actor. He does his own stunts.
Well, where he was going, like he didn't need eyes anymore is the thing.
And where he was going was the Borgias.
Yeah.
So he didn't end hunt for the wilder people, and he didn't need eyes for those, I guess. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's similar to how Christopher Lloyd got jobs after he threw away all the roads that were created because they didn't need roads in the future. In a way, I wish we didn't need roads because the United States infrastructure is falling to pieces.
And preach, brother, let's pedestrianize this whole country. Walk end to end just like Forrest Gump. He showed us the way.
Yeah, now, Robert Moses.
Is this, he should.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Here's something that a lot of people don't mention in the Goofs column. At the end of Back to the Future, he says, where we're going, we don't need roads. When you see the future in Back to the Future Part 2, there are lots of roads.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's also, fucking nasty with them.
It seems like when you're flying, it's not like you can just fly wherever. There are like specific flight paths that are basically sky roads.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
That's actually a good point.
I'm starting to think this guy who invented time travel after hitting his head on the sink when he was standing on the toilet might not have it all together.
Yeah, true. I don't trust him. Okay, so we're gonna jump right in. I'm gonna explain a little bit about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. We're gonna jump right in. We're gonna raw dog it. I'm gonna talk a little bit about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. There will be some like mild spoilers, but I hope that at the end you will understand a little bit of why I love this property.
Okay.
Okay, so I put together a little bit of a slideshow for you guys so you guys can see some of the beauty of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Let's pull this shit up, and I'm going to start slideshow over here. Now, we have this first slide, and this is the introduction. This is the first part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Now, something you have to understand is that there are multiple JoJo's and there are many bizarre adventures. And it's broken up into different series, and it kind of follows roughly multiple generations of the Joestar family. Now, Joestar, of course, is a traditional family name, a Liverpudlian family name. let me start my slideshow.
I mean, that would explain why the Beatles have a song about a guy named JoJo.
That's absolutely true. And in fact, you're also going to see through some of the naming conventions that the creator of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Hiroki Araki, is a huge fan of rock and roll and pop music because he is not too careful at disguising some of his favorite bands and songs.
Now, are you going to get into, I assume at some point, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure crosses over with JoJo Rabbit for the larger JoJo verse for JoJo No Way Home?
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they cross crosses over. There has been an argument in the case of that movie. Well, we'll talk about this later. Okay. We'll actually get into that when we get into part three, Stardust Crusaders. So we're going to talk first about part one, that is Phantom Blood. And right here we have this first slide. This is from the opening of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And we are, our story opens in 1880 in Liverpool.
Now, which one of these guys is JoJo that I see here?
That's a very good question. That is on the fellow on the right with the dark hair is Jonathan Jonathan Joestar.
And he's holding a book and he's got like a little red bow tie, very thick neck. Both of these guys are very built.
They're beefcakes.
I got to object to the way this gentleman is dressed with the purple hair because not only like so there's a you know he's wearing a dress shirt with a bow tie. And then over that appears to be some sort of V-neck sweater or sweater vest that's paisley. And then over that, there is a vest. And then over
it's like a corset vest. It doesn't cover his whole chest.
There is sort of a smoking jacket cape. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a lot of things going on.
Liverpool is very cold.
There's a lot of styles happening here.
They should call it JoJo's Bizarre Layering.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that you're pointing out, some of these style choices because one of the great things about this series is the fashion forward element of the characters. Now, standing over Jonathan Joestar's shoulder is Dio Brando. Now, Dio Brando is his adopted brother.
Okay.
Dio Brando's father saved Jonathan's father's life after a carriage accident that took the life of Jonathan's mother. So he adopted this poor kid, Dio Brando, and brought him into the family. Now, the whole part of this story arc is kind of the conflict between Dio and Jonathan. Now, Jonathan's our hero, so of course, he has nothing particularly interesting about him. He's big and tough and smart. Dio, on the other hand...
If I'm remembering from reading the comic, he is incredibly naive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Dio, on the other hand, is immediately evil. He beats up a dog early on. He kisses Jonathan's sweetheart. He turns all of Jonathan's friends against him. They fight quite a bit. And as you can see, Dio's also holding there. He's holding this, like, this stone mask. And now that stone mask is going to be pretty important because part of in the course of their struggles, they find out this stone mask is an Aztec artifact, and it somehow, when blood is splashed on it, it awakens, and if attached to a person, turns them into a vampire.
Okay, that counts as a bizarre adventure.
Smoking, right?
He says, "That's it." Would be appropriate, or he'd say, "At least somebody stop me," which somebody should stop him.
Yeah,
and that somebody is Jonathan Joestar. Now,
when he says, when Jim Carrey says, "Somebody stop me," does that mean that that whole movie is a cry for help?
Yes,
in many ways.
Well, he's a murderer.
I feel like that's part of the appeal of Jim Carrey is there's clearly sadness behind his eyes.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, like Will Ferrell. Yeah. He's a murderer. You mean the mask or Jim Carrey?
Good question. Well, I think the mask just sort of brings out what's inside you, as we see in the movie. The mask, like you know, when the bad guy gets it, he just turns into a big, like, tough guy who, like, spits out bullets. But when Jim Carrey, you know, who watches Tex Avery cartoons.
Guy.
He turns into a wolf.
He turns into a real cherry popping daddy. And the dog just pees all over everything.
That's the worst kind of daddy. Right? The worst kind of daddy.
By far.
Worst kind, yeah.
Nobody knows what happens when Jamie Kennedy puts on the mask because no one saw that movie, even the people who made it.
It's a mystery. That's what the experiment was.
if you watch that movie, write in and tell us that you did and that you're a real person and if you're Jamie Kennedy or not.
You're not a real person. Sorry, Jamie.
Malibu's so
as I said, the conflict between Jonathan Joestar and Dio Brando is central to this. Dio is trying to get Jonathan's father's fortune. He's trying to somehow get his father to leave his entire fortune to him. And in the process, he poisons Jonathan's father slowly, and then when his evil deeds are revealed, he becomes a, he puts on the mask, becomes an immortal vampire, and the rest of the series is Jonathan trying to defeat a evil, super powerful vampire dude who kills everything. It's a very gory, kind of horror-forward story. Mm. And he doesn't do it on his own. He enlists the help of some friends. Let's go to the next slide.
Okay.
We have two more Victorian gentlemen on the left.
We got Tom Petty from the Don't Come Around Here No More video.
Yeah.
Now, it's funny that you bring up Tom Petty because that actually is a gutter-born criminal named Robert E.O. Speedwagon.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Who, you know, he's like a, he's a rapscallion type. He becomes an important figure in the whole universe. He eventually forms a foundation that pays for the Joestar's family's fight against evil. And on the right is another gentleman. This is William Zeppeli, who is an Italian martial arts master.
Sure.
Who can harness the power of Hamon, which involves some kind of like ham? Careful breathing.
Yeah, just ham. Right? Mm-hmm.
The power of ham?
It's spelled very similarly. It's one of those like common, I feel like it's a common thing in martial arts, arts fantasy stories, to use ham and to use like breath control. Like breath control is like an all-purpose, like, If you can control your breathing, you can. In this case, it gives you like the power of life, which is the opposite of Dio's power of death. You can describe these gentlemen. They're both wearing top hats. They are flashy dressers. Checkerboard top hats, very common back then.
Zeppeli's got the longest cuffs in the world, with three cuff links on the outside per cuff. And they're
muscular,
huge arms. They're all kind of dressed like circus performers from like a rock and roll traveling freak concert circus, you know, like every time a band, like Marilyn Manson did like a circus theme, I feel like these would be like the ringmasters, you know?
Exactly. And that's exactly how you'd imagine a martial arts master from Italy to dress. Now, Jonathan is it
an Italian form of martial arts, or he went to the East to learn martial arts, but he's from Italy?
You know, I'm trying to remember because it was a while since I read this one. But I feel like he learned it from a master who will be introduced in the next segment.
Okay.
But it's like it's his like goal to defeat, like destroy the mask and the creatures that created this stone mask. So maybe it comes from like the Aztec people. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, he doesn't have to worry about destroying the mask. The sequel pretty much did that. The franchise is dead in the water.
That's true.
Yeah.
So Jonathan and his friends, as we said, fight Dio. Dio raises an army of zombies. And obviously one of the highlights, of course, you're in the 1880s. They got to definitely fight a zombie version of Jack the Ripper.
I thought you were going to that big exposition at the Crystal Palace where they had those dinosaur statues.
They didn't do that. That would have been a great idea.
No. Too bad.
In a final act of sacrifice, Jonathan defeats Dio. But he sacrifices himself, and he's going to live on through his unborn child, thus ensuring that we have another generation and we have another bizarre adventure on our hands. So let's move to the next slide, guys.
Let's do it.
Can't wait to see.
Okay, this is the next slide. This is the you're looking at the cover of the first issue of the comics. This is for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 2, titled Battle Tendency.
And who's this guy who's incredibly ripped and his shirt can't even cover his abs? That's how, I mean, he's lifting his arms up, I guess.
You're going to see a common style choice that many of these characters, their shirts cannot cover their abs. And there's a lot of straps. Similarly, their gloves cannot cover their fingers. Now, so the gentleman right in front, that's going to be this series' JoJo. That is Joseph Joestar, the grandson of Jonathan Joestar. Okay, so the Joestar family continues.
So Jonathan's son didn't do much of anything. The adventures skipped a generation.
I think I believe the unborn child in this case was a daughter, actually, Elliot.
Oh, okay.
Stuart, I will say that I've seen...
So Josephine Joestar could still have adventures. Yeah. Anyway, Dan, continue.
I've seen comic covers that are clearer to interpret than this one. Like, I'm not quite sure. Like,
not comic book covers by Dave McKean.
that's true.
It looks like we are looking at like a face through sort of the facets of a big diamond or something. Like,
it's almost like there's rays of light coming out from JoJo that are obscuring the figures in the background.
Who is doing a real glamour pose with both of his arms above his head. And
he,
like,
bent. He is bent stunting.
Back,
yeah.
So he can see his abs.
Yeah. In the back, in the scintillating light that seems to be radiating out from Joseph Joestar, you can see images of this series' villains, which we'll talk about in a second. So this series takes place much later. It takes place in the 1930s.
I could tell that from the way that he was dressed, what with his tank top with straps and his fingerless glove gauntlets.
Yeah. The way that he looks kind of like a Rob Liefeld character.
he does, if Rob Liefeld was cool.
Yeah.
He's made some good stuff.
I mean, he is like a Rob Liefeld character in that we don't see his feet because the image cuts off at the waist.
That's actually true. But he doesn't have enough pouches.
Yeah, oh no, not all. Straps but without pouches. That's a Liefeld no-no. So 1930s. What kind of guy is he? What's
is
he
that
doing?
Your Elified no-no of the week, by the way, Elliot?
Thank you. That is. That's my Elified no-no. Thank you for reminding me about my Elified no-nos. The Elified no-no this week is, if you're going to have straps, put some pouches on them.
What are your heroes
going to carry things in? We don't know what they're carrying in the pouches. We don't need to know. Probably Subway tokens and lipstick. But your heroes need straps with pouches. That's the Liefeld no-no and my Elified no-no for the week. Thank you.
So this series, JoJo, is he's a globetrotting adventurer, like you'd imagine. He's working on behalf of the Speedwagon Foundation. REO Speedwagon is still alive, but he's an old man, and he is dealing with some Nazi problems.
The
focus of this story is the creators, the race of beings that created that vampire mask from the first series, are a group of four immortal beings that are found in stone pillars in the Aztec ruins. These four pillar men. Let's advance so we can see what they look like.
Yeah.
Yes, please. I'd love to. Oh, they look like all the other characters.
They look exactly like all the other characters. So these four immortal beings that are, let's say, roughly humanoid.
They're pretty humanoid.
They're pretty human. They're just big buff dudes.
They look like any comic.
And they have lines on them that I can't tell if they are scars or stitching, like they're cracks, made out of canvas.
Like they're rock men.
Or just shadows. These are the four pillar men. They are immortal beings that are seeking to become the ultimate being. And in order to do that, they need to combine one of these stone masks with a rare red gem called the Stone of Aja. For all you Steely Dan fans out there.
I don't get that reference. I don't understand.
These four pillar men are named Santana, WAMU, ACDC, and Cars. Now, of those four, which one do you think is the most powerful, guys, just based on the name?
ACDC. It's got to be, right?
Dan, what do you think?
I would say ACDC. I mean, like, or Cars Santana. Is probably my favorite band of those. But, yeah, ACDC is probably the most powerful.
I got to surprise you guys. It's Cars is by far the most powerful.
Really? Yeah. That's surprising. Yeah. It's very surprising. You know.
And so this series...
But I like it. So you don't have to tell me which one's which, but I like that they all seem to have kind of boy band personalities. One guy with the kind of white headdress is clearly the sensitive one, and the guy with the other guy in the middle is like the seductive one. The one with the black head wrap, he's the leader, and the one in the back, he's kind of like the bad boy bruiser. He's the one who's like a little bit less articulate. You know, you wonder which fan is going to like that one because he's all about breaking stuff, but he's got his fans.
He's got his fans. That's the thing about boy bands. And also characters from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which any group of characters from this series are a lot like boy bands. So the focus of this series is Joseph Joestar's struggle against these immortal beings that are almost impossible to defeat. In fact, he gets in a fight with them, and they beat him so badly, and he's like, don't kill me yet. Give me a month to get more powerful. Give me a month to train, and then I'll give you a real fight. And these pillar men are like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do it. I want a real
incredibly
fight.
Lenient, an incredible opportunity on the part of the pillar men. Very sportsmanlike.
They put a ticking clock on there. They put magic binding poison rings around his heart and throat that after a month, they will dissolve and kill him. So he has to defeat them in battle. And the only way he can get the antidote is from their nose rings and lip rings, respectively. So, of course, he has to go train. And let's move on. Let's see his teacher. That's right. Let's advance to the next slide. That's his teacher, okay. Lisa. She's a ham-on master. That's right. We're talking about breath control again. So it still
sounds like it's based around ham.
Yep, it's based around ham, the magical life giving force of breath control, and he fights these immortal beings. It's
from
great.
Lisa, I'm getting big kind of Carmen Sandiego vibes.
There's definitely she's a mysterious woman. She has very big shoulder pads. Yeah, she's great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Now this is interesting to me because
her arms seem to be the length of her body, but they're bent at the elbows, so it's hard to tell.
It's perspective, dude.
but she's holding her waist. Wait a minute.
This is interesting because I just listened to the recent. There was a. I listened to the podcast. It's called The Hit Parade. It's a Slate podcast, and they had an episode on. I forget what the name of the style of music it was.
Jazz.
No. It was
Zydeco.
No.
These are good questions.
No, there's a type of music that Lisa and Cult Jam. The band was a part of this wave of freestyle. That was what it was. And I was like, oh, I'm listening to this podcast. Let me Google Lisa. And half of it was these
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure
manga characters. And so I was I don't think that's the band Lisa. And Cult Jam that I'm looking at. It seems to be a large, muscular woman from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. But so this is it's interesting that you did this. It provides the second half, the resolution to a mystery that was in my brain. why does this character have the same name as this band? It seems like everyone has the name of bands in JoJo. So.
Oh, do payoff. They? You're buckle up, buddy. Yeah. So this, once again, these first two parts are fairly straightforward. We have like a Victorian horror action adventure and then like a globetrotting action horror adventure against immortal monsters. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now
mm-hmm.
we're about
the
class, to get to
the two main genres. Yeah.
Before we jump into the third part, which is where I feel like this series really kicks off, like really the heart of JoJo's, I feel like Dan has some words from one of our sponsors.
That's true. You know what? The Flophouse is sponsored mostly by listeners like you who are kind enough to become a member at MaximumFun.org. But we also have some kind advertisers as well. And this week, the Flophouse is sponsored in part by Policy Genius, which is not an insurance company, but a marketplace that helps shoppers looking for insurance understand their options and compare quotes across companies and get a policy all in one place. Why get life insurance? We pay hundreds of dollars per year to protect homes, cars, phones, but most of us aren't taking steps to protect our families' finances. Mortgage payments, private loans, other types of debt don't disappear if something happens to you, so a life insurance policy can provide your loved ones with a cushion they can use to cover those costs. If you already have coverage through work, having life insurance through your job may not be enough. Most people need up to 10 times more coverage to properly provide for their families, and coverage through work isn't portable because if you leave your job, the policy doesn't go with you. Why get covered now? Well, life insurance gets more expensive as you age, so it's smart to get a policy sooner rather than later, and Policy Genius can help you find
the best price for the insurance that you want. Make sure you're not paying a cent more than you have to for the coverage you need. So, Policy Genius is an insurance marketplace that makes it easy to compare quotes from top companies like AIG, Prudential, others in one place to find your lowest price on life insurance. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. Options start at just $17 per month for $500,000 of coverage. Just click the link in the description or head to policygenius.com to get personalized quotes in minutes and the right policy for your needs. The licensed agents at Policy Genius will work for you, not the insurance companies. They're on hand through the whole process to help you understand your options so you can make decisions with confidence. So head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save.
Hey there, quick favor to ask. Will you help us out by taking a 5-minute survey at MaximumFun.org/survey? As you know, most of the support for Max Fun comes directly from folks like you, but many of our shows and our network also rely on limited advertising for some revenue. This survey helps us attract advertisers that are a good fit for the audiences of our shows, and it helps many of our hosts secure a bit of extra income. It should only take a few minutes to complete, and you'll get a discount at Max Fun Store when you do. That's MaximumFun.org/survey. Thanks.
I'm Lisa Hannawalt.
And I'm Emily Heller.
9 years ago, we started a podcast to try and learn something new every episode.
Things have gone a little off the rails since then. Tune in to hear about
low-stakes neighborhood drama,
gardening,
the sordid, nasty underbelly of the horse girl lifestyle,
hot sauce,
addiction to TV and sweaty takes on celebrity culture,
and the weirdest, grossest stuff you can find on Wikipedia.org.
We'll read all of it, no matter how gross. There's something for everyone on our podcast, Baby Geniuses.
Hosted by us, two horny adult idiots.
Hang out with us as we try and fail to retain any knowledge at all.
Every other week on Maximum Fun.
Stuart, back to you.
Okay, now let's get into Series 3 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Let's do
Stardust Crusaders. Why don't you guys advance the slide so we can see. You're looking at the cover of the first issue of Stardust Crusaders there.
Oh, so many hearts.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so as you can see, there's some very specific design choices. And on right there, you see this series, JoJo. That's Jotaro Kujo, the grandson of Joseph Joestar.
Kujo?
Jotaro Kujo, he's the Japanese grandson of Joseph Joestar. And he, finally we have a JoJo that actually has a little bit of personality. Jotaro is clearly
in volume 3.
In volume 3. Well, where is the previous
like most cable shows? You just got to stick with it through the first couple seasons and then it gets really good.
In a lot of ways it's like Succession.
I'm waiting for someone to be like, stick through the first 3 seasons, but in the last episode of the 4th season it really gets good. Oh, how many seasons are there? 4 seasons. That's the last one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, actually, I'm a firm believer that if at any point you are intrigued by what I'm talking about, I would highly recommend starting with series 3, or I think with the animated series, they actually condense the first 2 into just the first season. So just start with Stardust Crusaders, because this kind of defines the series.
Maybe that's what I should have done, because I started reading the first volume and I did find the personalitylessness of the original JoJo. Joe Prime to be a little off.
Jonathan Joestar,
It reminded me a lot of the there's an
Joseph
Nathaniel West
Jehoshaphat.
Book. There's a Nathaniel West book called A Cool Million, in which the joke of it is just that these two characters who are naive, optimistic Americans of the type that you would see in novels around the turn of the century in the 20th century, just terrible things happen to them one scene after another, just horrible things. And they're always really naive and idealistic and optimistic. And I was like, oh, this JoJo guy reminds me of this, but it's like, I don't know where this story is going or what's going on. So, so Stardust Crusaders is the one.
Stardust Crusaders is where you should start, because what this is the series
you might
where
as well
they
call it Stardust Crusade Hears.
They really should.
There's no law against it.
The most notable addition at this point is they introduced the idea of the stand. Now, the stand stands are like magic powers that select individuals have. It's like a mutant power or a superpower, but it's some kind of a power that only other people who have a stand can see, and it's usually represented by some kind of like anthropomorphized figure of some kind. As you can see on the image on the right, we see Jotaro with his stand, Star Platinum.
So describe, it's kind of like a bluish purplish, what, armored figure with long hair, and he's got gloves covered in frog
looks
eggs.
Like,
or some
looks
kind
like
of
a
round
wrestler.
Bobble.
Yeah, looks like a wrestler.
Okay.
And he's just kind of jumping out of JoJo with in a flurry of Japanese lettering.
Yeah, so these stands are something that the stand user can summon and it provides some kind of magic power. In this case, Jotaro Star Platinum moves super fast and punches things super hard.
Okay.
And
I don't remember him in the book, The Stand. Dan,
he's not, but you should check.
I'll go. Dan, can you guys wait a second while I go check my unabridged version of Stephen King's The Stand? God.
Okay. Oh, this will take a while.
Part one, chapter one. Oh, everyone was feeling sick. Ugh, I'm feeling so sick. I guess it's some kind of virus or something. That's not good.
Oh, I'm almost 100%
sure. I'm still feeling sick.
It more likely starts with some kind of like 50s bullshit or like
baby,
some
do you
kind
love
of
your man
slang.
Lyrics.
A description of a classic car. So, Jotaro, as I said,
if it makes you feel better, there definitely are scenes of a teenage boy masturbating and then letting the semen just kind of dry into a scale on his belly. There's a lot of that in Stephen King books too.
Doesn't happen in JoJo's, but you know, I haven't read it all yet. So
maybe his adventure is not that bizarre.
As I said, Jotaro is kind of a bad boy. He's sassy, but he's a little bit smart. He doesn't like authority. He also has hair that kind of clips through the back of his hat, which is really cool.
Cool.
He is in all ways, he's the coolest dude.
Okay.
And he goes on a globetrotting adventure against an immortal vampire. That's right. Dio's back. And when Dio came back, he awoken the stands in a number of different individuals. So Dio is sending stand-powered individuals who he has brainwashed to fight them. And then, of course, they turn them over to their own. You know, it's one of those things where they, like, get in a fight, and by the end, they're friends again, and then they join up their team. So let's
look. He's causing people to literally stand in the place where they live.
Exactly. I'll have to examine that statement. So let's go to the next panel. This is some fan art where we have, this is our team. This is our Globetrotting Adventures team.
I hate to say it. I kind of like the fan art.
Yeah,
the fan art
is a little less busy, I would say.
I think you're ignoring the appeal.
Okay.
I think you're ignoring the appeal of the poses that could never be reproduced by a human body. So as we can see, this is Jotaro, Kakyoin, Paul Nareff in the middle. He's the silly bad boy. Okay. There's a lot of bad boys. You have Avdol, and then on the far left, that's right. You have Joseph Joestar, the hero from the previous series. Grandpa Joe comes along to help. So they travel
just
around
like
the world.
In Willy Wonka.
It's a lot like Willy Wonka.
So Willy Wonka, I didn't realize Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is an unofficial prequel, I guess. Or not I guess it takes place in between volumes of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
I would argue
it is a bizarre
adventure.
Those-
And all those characters dress appropriately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's REO Speedwagon was dressed kind of Wonka-ish. Yeah.
What is with this? There's a guy here who has like straps on his pants in such a way as to sort of like emphasize his area. Like
it's like a cod piece over his pants. Yeah.
No, well, but they're like straps that go where, as Stuart would put it, the cum gutters go to sort of like, you know, like
don't put words in Stu's mouth, especially not those
pull
words.
It taut over the the buffalo area, as they would say on Mystery Science Theater.
So that's Muhammad Avdol. His stand is Magician Red, because as you've already pieced together, all the stands, at least initially, are all themed around the major arcana of the tarot.
Obviously.
Yeah, whereas, that's what I guessed, yeah.
It makes a lot of sense, right?
You know, you didn't even need to say it, because...
But you look at these characters and you're like...
Way ahead of you.
You look at these characters and you're like, they're dressed pretty crazy. Well, this is very reserved for this series. This is a very normal style. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to the next. So they got to fight an enemy, and that enemy, of course, is Dio Brando, immortal vampire. Let's look at this next panel. That's what Dio looks like now.
His belt buckle and also his knee pads are all in the shape of enormous hearts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because he's got style. And standing over his shoulder, that's right, Dio has a stand as well. His stand, the world.
Okay, what does the world do? What's the world's power? Other than also having heart-shaped knee
pads. Like the earth? Like the world?
Well, the card, the world, the major arcana of the tarot, the world. In fact, it takes them a while. So one of the exciting things about stands is that they routinely run into situations where they have to fight these superpowered individuals who have some kind of superpower. And every time it almost becomes they have to figure out what their enemy's power is. Whereas I was used to Western superhero comics where somebody will show up and I'm like, I'm the master of, shooting webs out of my hands, or I'm going to cover you in glue and then I'll dry forever, Spider-Man. In this stuff, the stand users are like, I am not going to tell you shit, because as soon as you know what my powers are, you'll be able to defeat me. So a lot of it is trial and error and luckily, we got a Jotaro Kujo who's super smart, as well as being sassy and super tough. A lot of it is there's a certain amount of I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but
mystery.
That's exactly what I was looking for. Mystery.
This reminds me of many years ago when I was a student at NYU, the cartoonist Evan Dorkin came to talk to the Science Fiction and Fantasy Club, and he talked about how stupid he always thought it was that he's fighting Spider-Man. Spider-Man goes, I know Electro's powers. I know I get him wet, he'll short out. He gets him wet, he shorts out. He sends him to jail. Electro gets out of jail. He puts on the same Electro costume. And it's like you're saying, Stu, it's like he's advertising how you defeat him. And Evan Dorkin was positing a world where Electro dresses up like Scorpion. And Spider-Man goes, it's Scorpion. I know how to stop him. I just grab his tail and swing him around. And he grabs his tail and Electro just electrocutes him through the tail. And that would have been a smarter move. But these Western heroes and villains are just so prideful. They can't put on another one's clothes and kind of let them get the credit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's Dio's whole thing, is he doesn't let anyone know what his power is, which of course is to freeze time for everyone else for exactly 5 seconds, is a lot.
That's a good power to hide too, because you're not going to figure it out right away. Yeah.
And then, of course, and though his stand is fairly close ranged, he'll usually freeze time and then have his stand go and punch a hole through the person, which is fatal for most people. Nine times out of ten. So that is Stardust
Dan,
Crusaders.
Are you pulling that from the New England Journal of Medicine? Is that where you're getting that statistic
study
from?
Holes being punched through people.
Stardust Crusaders has a ton of crazy stuff in it. It introduces stands. It's this fun globe-trotting adventure that ends up in Egypt. There's one of my favorite sequences is a sequence where they get in a they're fighting a stand user who is a gambler, and he keeps forcing them to gamble away basically their lives. And it's like such a silly, non-action-based sequence, but it's so fun, and the reactions of all the characters are so crazy. I love it in every animated version I've seen. When I read it, it was like, I already knew what was going to happen. I still love it. That's the heart of what I love about JoJo's, is that it's never what I expect, and I love the weird mystery of trying to figure out everybody's abilities and people overreacting to things. It's great. So Stardust Crusaders, thumbs up. If you want to check out JoJo's, that's the place to go. Time to move on to the next one, and that's our next series. That's right. And also in Stardust Crusaders, there's a villain named Vanilla Ice who destroys people.
Destroys
people? Just like the real Vanilla Ice.
Well,
Yep.
His stand involves creating a void bubble around him that destroys everything it touches, which is probably inspired by Vanilla Ice. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide. This is the first cover of our next series, Diamond is Unbreakable. Now, we have a nice, cool collection of characters there. Obviously, you can see in the back, Jotaro Kujo shows up, and now he's a little more experienced. He's learned some stuff from his battles with Dio. But we have a couple other characters here.
He's got a bigger
here,
hat, certainly.
As you can see, a couple of these characters are wearing school uniforms. That's right.
I could not tell that.
Yeah.
They're so covered in gewgaws and baubles and chains and things and ornaments. I missed that.
So this series takes place entirely in a small Japanese town named Morio, and it almost has like a weird Twin Peaks vibe because there's a serial killer who is stalking the streets, a serial killer, that's right, who has the powers of a stand, and we follow our new JoJo, Josuke Higashikata, a Japanese teenager with a cool pompadour haircut and a powerful stand ability, and a bunch of his friends as they travel around town and deal with other stand users and eventually try and track down this serial killer. Let's get right to Josuke. That's him. Go to the next panel.
Oh, is this from the cartoon?
This is from the cartoon. That's Josuke. As you can see, he's got a pompadour haircut. And over his shoulder is his stand,
his
crazy
stand.
Diamond.
Sure. let's describe this character. I would say that this character is if there was sort of a fetish gear version of Bane.
Yeah, I could see that. I was going to say, like, if the X-Men villain Avalanche, if half of his costume fell off in pieces and revealed that he didn't wear anything underneath.
There is
both
a lot of flesh here.
It's a lot of flesh, just kind of hearts stuck onto his body.
Including in the groin zone.
Yeah.
One in the groin zone and one has like a little, he's got a little like soul patch heart.
Yeah.
But he also
matches the hearts that Josuke uses to adorn to decorate his school uniform.
Yeah. And he's also got tubes going from his neck into, I don't know what, his back. Seems unnecessary.
Uh-huh.
But, Bane had like a tank
just
that he would
tubes,
get stuff from.
Tubes going from one part of his body to another part of his body.
I mean, we all have those inside of us.
Exactly.
Weird to have outside of you. Yeah.
So this is where
I'm just noticing that the top of his helmet is flat, but it's still shaped like a heart.
Shaped like a heart. Hell yeah. So Josuke's stand is similar to Star Platinum in that it's fairly short range, it's fast and tough. But it has a very specific, unique ability, and that's the things it punches and destroys, he can remake. So he can heal people, he can fix things that have been destroyed. This is the series where they really start exploring some of the wacky stand powers that they can do and some of the weird combos that they can do with the various abilities. And it's also an important thing because previously when they would introduce a villain that has a power that like kills somebody, now what they'll do is they can demonstrate how deadly somebody's stand is, and then Josuke can use Crazy Diamond to just heal that person again, which is important. You need to have a healer on your team, basically.
Yeah. You got to balance out the party. Can I just say before we move on, also, JoJo, the top of JoJo's pompadour kind of looks like a waffle iron. Like, the texture is... To me, very evocative of a waffle iron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the key things about this Josuke is you cannot make fun of his hair or else it sends him into a berserker rage.
Oh, no.
So, Dan, you better keep that to yourself.
Oh, no.
Dan, do not say anything more about that because you might get a visitor that you are not going to be happy with.
Yeah. What he does isn't very nice.
So, a lot of this series is JoJo and his friends running into enemy stand users, having, you know, a life or death battle, and then oftentimes defeating the enemy and that enemy becoming their friend and part of the team, which is great. At one point, a character shows up that is an alien And that's the first time we've ever addressed aliens in the series, which is kind of wild. And the alien has a stand. That stand, of course, is Earth, Wind, and Fire. It's a wild season. It's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And also it really plays into like the horror angle with an evil serial killer villain who we'll introduce on the next slide. Right yes. there. That is
okay.
That's Yoshikage Kira. That's the name of the kind of like uptight businessman, serial killer guy who, you know, is just looking for some woman to share his life, but he often kills them. In fact, always does. And standing in front of him is his stand. That's right, Killer Queen.
Now, his stand has some powerful thighs.
Yeah, those thighs are incredible roughly as thighs. Wide as barrels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also some sort of a cat robot.
He looks like a cat robot.
Like a pink
Based
cat
on his
robot.
Appearance, what do you think his power is?
Well, he's certainly jellical. So there's right that right off the top.
True.
So I'm sure he can sing about himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I don't know. I something about it, like some sort of like evil love perfume. Is that a thing?
Mm. I mean, it is now.
That would 100% fit within this series.
Uh-huh.
So the powers of Killer Queen are all based around explosives.
Okay.
Because nothing is more powerful than a serial killer that can blow up all evidence of his crimes. Oh my God. That's how he's been able to survive for so long in Morio. This is a super fun series. It leads to a really fun conclusion with some fun, like, time-hopping shenanigans. I like this one a lot. Yeah, so thumbs up. A lot of sweet boys in this one. Speaking of sweet boys, we're going to move on to the next series where we leave Morio, Japan, and we go to... on a trip to Italia. So let's look at this next group of boys.
this sure. next group,
obviously
they seem
in Italy.
To exist in. Yeah, it's either Italy or Narnia.
Looking at these boys, what do you think their profession is?
I'm getting real improv everywhere vibes. Some kind of modern circus or mostly acrobatics or
I know we mentioned a boy band before, but maybe that. I don't know.
Yep.
Wait, hold on, we'll figure this out. Are they a roller derby team? like a Renfest roller derby team?
I know you guys don't have a lot of experience with it, but they are very clearly a group of Italian mafiosos.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
With the big belt buckle that says A hanging over the crotch of one and the other one having kind of like a half shirt with leather straps
just sort
attaching
of
it to a neck leash.
Open jumpsuit, this like white jumpsuit with like an open breastplate with tags dangling off of it.
They're like little paddleball paddles that are just hanging off of the. And there's the guy who's got no shirt and then a tie and then over that kind of a weird kind of slit up the middle jacket. Mm-hmm.
Or the one that has sort of abs painted on in purple under their shirt.
Yeah.
And
then there's the one that has a hat that is like a red, it's almost like a miniature wimple. With a phallic kind of blue sword going down the forehead.
Classic mafiosos.
Yep. So this is the team.
And we didn't even mention the one whose hair seems to be contorted to the shape of three eyeballs along his forehead.
The best part is that the last member of the team is the JoJo of this series. That's right, Giorno Giovanna.
Now which one is
so
that?
That's the blonde haired fellow with the curls and the heart shaped cutout of his pink jumpsuit.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
So this is the cast of the final series I'm going to be talking about tonight. This is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Series 5, Vento Oreo, the Golden Wind. And these are the our JoJo. Let's move on to the next slide. Mm-hmm. Our next slide is right there. That's Giorno Giovanna and his stand. Giorno Giovanna and his stand, the Gold Experience.
I think at this point, we have to mention that there is. I think we've danced around that there is a real heavy kind of Tom of Finland homoeroticism.
Yeah, are
to
they a
lot
couple,
of this.
The Stand?
Yeah, the Stand is kind of like leaning into JoJo with its arms around his shoulders.
Over him.
Yeah, yeah. Head kind of like nuzzled against JoJo's head, and there's a tear falling from the Stand's eye, it looks like, or perhaps that's just that it's just come up out of the water. But there's a real, I feel like this is the most, this is the one that has
it's
most implied a sexual relationship between JoJo and
so
his Stand.
Part of the, one of the things about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and the art style is that I always kind of liken it to if somebody was doing fashion plates for an issue of Italian Vogue and used only WWF wrestlers to as the models. And I feel like this is the most on the nose. Like I feel like the fashion in this specific one, since they are in Italy, the fashion is super bonkers. And it's so funny because they regularly mention how the mafia can blend in with society. And I'm like, every single one of these gangsters looks like a maniac.
I mean, I guess they could blend in with like the future of Time Cop.
Like,
or like the Super Mario Brothers, the movie
the
world.
The Fifth Element, they would blend right in.
Like there's moments where they're like, we need to find the Stand user in this crowd. I'm like, I think you can find him. It's the crazy looking one. So as I said before, so standing over Giorno's shoulder is his Stand, the Gold Experience. His Stand is a similarly short range Stand, but the and similar to Josuke's, it has a life giving element. So the things it touches, it can alter the life form. So it could turn something that has, like it could turn a stick into in like a somebody's liver, or it can turn a beetle into a necklace. It's this weird kind of all purpose like morphing ability.
It has the same power that Calvin's transmogrifying box has in Calvin the Hobbes.
But the focus is around life, which is kind of cool because it does it's like an echo from the previous, like the Hamon, like breath control life energy thing. So an important thing here also is that Giorno Giovanna isn't a Joestar. Giorno is the son of Dio Brando. That's right. The villain from Stardust Crusaders. So he puts together, he joins this team of gangsters with the express purpose of trying to take down the boss, because the boss of the Italian crime organization, Passione, that's the name of the organization. This boss has been selling drugs to children, which in this series is the worst possible thing you could do. So
it's
he wants to
bad.
Become a
and I mean in real to, life it's pretty bad too.
No, you're right. He wants to become a gang star, in his words, and overthrow the organization and run the organization himself. And he initially fights and then enlists who I would consider to be the real hero of the story. Let's move to the next slide. That's the capo of their group. That's okay. Bruno Bucciaretti and his Stand, Sticky Fingers, aka Zipper Man. Because a lot of the names
in this, I get it. Those are zippers that are hanging from them. I see.
A lot of the names were changed for the English translation and dub. There's a Stand called Kraftwerk that was changed to Arts and Crafts. Obviously, in this case, there's one of my favorites is Baby Head. Was originally Baby Face. That's a Stand that involves a computer and using somebody's DNA to create a evil Stand baby. This is a wild series.
I am. Why did they? So glad this is called Zipper Man, because I was looking at it. And I'm like, that looks like a big, like the little thing, like the thing that you hold on to in a zipper. The little tab, like
the flange,
there's a giant one hanging off of kind of the belt area of the Stand. And I was like, am I crazy? Is that like a zipper thing? And it was good to know that I was right.
It's sorry, not Ellie, metal penis, man.
Yeah.
You were going to say something.
No, yeah, just that it does look like he has a giant paddle penis.
Yeah.
And Bruno has this, like, weird,
short
bangs. And
that Stand has a lot of attitude. I feel like the Stands have more and more attitude.
Yeah.
This one's all attitude. Bruno Bucciaretti is the leader of the group. He's got a bowl cut with bangs, and he has these, like, barrettes in his hair.
I don't know if I'd call it a bowl cut. That's a Louise Brooks haircut.
Yeah, it's a bob. It's a little bob.
Yeah.
It's a Bob, you're right. Similar to Giorno, he's got a cutout in his little suit, showing off a nice set of tattoos. Now, his Stan Sticky Fingers, when it things it touches, he can open up, like, zippers, so it allows him to, like, he can, like, punch somebody's arm and their arm will come unzipped from their body. He can punch his own body and unzip parts of it.
Now, Stuart, this is postulating that just like a normal arm is zipped on.
Well, the power creates the zipper, right?
Yeah, it creates a zipper. He can punch a wall and create a zipper and then fall through the wall
the ability to unzip a zipper is not that great a superpower. Yeah. Most people can do that.
Yeah. That's true. What if you don't need a stand for that?
No.
You just embarrass people by being like XYZ. Now, what if he punched Zipper from Rescue Rangers?
I feel like Zipper would get covered in zippers and then get unzipped, and we would all be fucking bumped. Didn't Zipper like? Yeah. Wait.
Especially
didn't Zipper marry Gadget?
Well, in the recent Chippendale movie.
Canon. It's canon. Well, Dan doesn't married now. Canon. You have to imagine them on their honeymoon. Imagine it right now.
Sure. Why not?
Let's look at some of the villains that are arrayed against our rowdy boys here.
Okay,
we got the next slide is the assassin squad that are all named after food. We got Chocolata, Pesci, Fromage, all those fucking shits, and they of course attack them. They attack our friends one by one. One of them, Pesci, has a stand that is a magical fishing rod. It's great. Oh man, it's great. These guys.
Look at these
normal gangsters.
The one where his head is also his neck, and he's got like a pineapple top coming out of
his head. That's Pesci, of course, and he's kind of a wimp. And
this is the first time that I realized. I'm like, oh, it's Joe Fish. Joe Fish is his name. Joe Fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Thank you for that realization. Yeah. No, I'm glad.
The guy in the middle with the weird goth jester cap.
Robert De Niro is Robert of Nero.
What? Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And Al Pacino's name actually means pachinko.
Oh. Yeah. The game or the new series on Hulu?
Both.
Is it Hulu? I don't even remember.
I don't know.
I want to point out in the next slide. We're going to advance to the next slide because I got something special for you. We have a stand that's right after Dan's heart here. That is one of the enemies, and the stand is Talking Heads.
Oh man.
Now, describe
As
Talking
the series
Heads to
goes
me.
On, it's really visually moving into Aeon Flux territory. It's
one was super Aeon Flux.
Yeah, the bodies are getting thinner and more distorted. Like, they're postures are more distorted and on oblique angles, and that kind of unnerving Aeon Flux quality.
I understand why it's called Talking Head, because the head is the largest thing, but it's not just a head. It's got little arms and like kind of a little body that trails off into
it's like a baby devil genie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It kind of looks like if there's a cute version of that squid from Prometheus, it's sort of in that
It's
zone.
In the movie. The cute version is in
okay,
the movie.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a little baby squid.
Yeah.
So to give you an idea what Talking Head's power is it climbs into your mouth and replaces your tongue and then says the exact opposite of what you want it to say.
Amazing. What a great
speaking
power.
In tongues, I get it. Yeah. It's a
very specific power. Luckily, it's used in coordination with a teleporting shark stand that can teleport from different bodies of water, including blood and tears coming out of your eye.
Sure.
This is similar to Stardust Crusaders in that there's a little bit of a globe-trotting element. They travel all around Italy. We get to know all of these rowdy
boys. Stanley Tucci. Wait, so is Stanley Tucci looking for Italy or whatever? Is that just a JoJo's Adventure series?
It is a lot like a JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I wonder what Stanley Tucci's stand would be. I mean, he dresses, depending on the role, could easily dress like one of our various stand users.
An incorrectly made Negroni is his stand.
Oh, no.
Wow. Shots fired.
Now in the
shots
in
I
the,
don't understand fire.
In the so in the third series we introduced the concept of stands. In the fourth series we introduced the idea that stands are given to people if they are shot by a magical arrow that will either kill them or bring out their stand.
Oh, like the Terrigen Mist. Okay.
Exactly. And a lot of the action involves chasing around trying to get that arrow away from bad guys. Finally, in this series, we address the idea that stands come from an alien meteorite that came to Earth and was basically causing some kind of a virus that would either kill you or give you powers. And then somebody took the meteorite rock and formed arrows out of it and then sold those arrows to a hag named Enya in Egypt who gave them to Dio. So that's how, so far that's where we're at on stands and how they came to be. And finally, let's talk about the guy, the big bad, the boss of the organization. Let's go to the next slide. Oh. This is what a crime boss looks like, guys.
Sure.
Of course, that's what you think of. That's Diavolo and his stand, King Crimson. Yeah, so Diavolo is a super bad dude. He dresses like a totally normal gangster, and King Crimson has a little baby face.
If a gangster was in those creepy Calvin Klein commercials from about 25, 30 years ago, where kind of young people in jeans and no shirts stood next to ladders in a basement and answered uncomfortable questions about themselves.
And his stand looks like Iron Man in fishnets.
Yeah. If this is that waffle print again, if Iron Man fell into a waffle iron, this is that guy, yeah.
And King Crimson, it's another thing where they Diavolo tries to keep his identity secret because, of course, he's a secretive mob boss. He tries to keep his power secret, his power, based on the name King Crimson, the look, what do you guys think his power might be?
Just he releases a flood of blood.
Oh, that would be awesome. It is not a flood of blood. That's similar to some other stands, though.
Okay, so maybe what if it's like it's like King. So it's like he takes you to court because you're in the court of the Crimson King. So he's he's a lawyer. He's a lawyer and he's good with injunctions and torts and things. Mm-hmm.
These are all really good guesses. He has a two-part power. One is that he can see briefly what is going to happen in the future. And the other is that he can erase 10 seconds worth of time. which is a weird power, and I don't quite know why or how it's good, but he does it a lot. it leads to a very complicated showdown at the end that is not necessarily my favorite, but you know, this was still quite a bizarre adventure to go on. That's it at the end of five series worth of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I'm looking forward to see where it goes next. I believe our next JoJo is our first female JoJo, Jolene Kujo, the daughter of Jotaro, the coolest dude in the universe, as I mentioned before. There's so many cool stands. You gotta catch them all. I recommend this series. Guys, do you have any parting questions or thoughts on this adventure I've taken you on?
No. I feel like before this, I had sort of a my understanding of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure was at an F, and now it's sort of a D+.
So, easily a D+, yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No, you're welcome.
I also don't have any questions. I feel like that was thorough, comprehensive. It did leave me asking more questions than were answered, but it also left me afraid of answering those questions.
Yeah, exactly.
And unsure of myself and who I am and what works in the universe and what I should be expecting from my entertainment. So thank you for that.
So guys, I've almost finished this bottle of Mezcal, so I think it's probably a good time for us to sign out. This podcast is on the Max Fun Network. You can check out a bunch of other fun podcasts on there. Some are not about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
roughly 99.999999% are not about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
So you're saying there's a chance. This podcast was edited by the loving hands of Alex Smith. You can find him as Howell Doughty on various social media. You can check out his podcast, Howell Doughty's Fast Track, which Dan just recorded a dope-ass song for.
It's true.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I've been Dan McCoy.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
Bye!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.